Welcome to Special Sauce, a Sirius Seeds podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
Yeah, I'd love to develop more recipes with my mom. My mom the other day told me that she was like, I think I have enough recipes for 3 cookbooks. And I was like, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Mom.
That's awesome. But Priya Krishna, author of the lovely Indianish, is still with us. So you're writing for various pubs. By the way, some serious, like, high-quality pubs. We're not talking about Weekly Reader or the Chelsea News, you know, the New Yorker, the New York Times. It's pretty impressive. I bet even your mom was impressed.
Yeah, I think they were both really – I think they didn't know what was going to happen when I went freelance, and they were a little bit worried. And then
– once they could tell their friends – that Priya had written a
exactly.
piece for the New York Times. I know I had the same thing with my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Finally, my mother-in-law has something to tell her friends about what her son-in-law does.
Totally. Because otherwise, it's very hard. It was very hard for them to understand what I did for a living.
For sure. But how did the book come about?
The seeds of it were kind of planted while I was working at Lucky Peach. We worked with an amazing editor, this woman named Rika Alanik at Clarkson Potter.
Who was the assistant for my very first book.
Wow.
When she was an undergraduate at Yale and a friend of my niece's.
That's amazing. Wow. I absolutely love her. And she edited all of our books. And we had a book come out called Power Vegetables. And my mom contributed more recipes than anyone to that cookbook because I'd asked her for recipes. And Rika in particular had just kind of fallen in love with the recipes my mom contributed. Also loved my mom's story, and she felt like that story felt like one that was really relevant, and that there also wasn't a cookbook that made Indian food feel like simple and doable on a weeknight.
Got it.
And so she was like, I want a book that kind of marries those two ideas, that, you know, first gen, second gen narrative, and the idea of like a really straightforward and accessible Indian cookbook that doesn't feel the need to adhere to traditions or explain to you all the different regional cuisines of India, but also does move past what the food that you see in restaurants. And she sort of painted this picture for me. And then I wrote a proposal. And as I was writing the proposal, it was one of those things where it just all clicked. I was like, oh, yeah, obviously this is a book.
That's
that should
fascinating.
Exist.
So it was her idea. We should explain that Rika, after being my assistant, which didn't last very long because she was still in college, became an editor at a publishing house. So she really knew her way around every aspect of publishing when she became an agent.
Yeah.
You say the book is maybe first and foremost about identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that couldn't have come from Rika. We know that comes from you.
Yeah, I mean, it all kind of comes back to the title, Indian-ish. It's a very apt descriptor for the food in the book, but it's also an apt descriptor for how I feel. You know, for my whole life, I always felt Indian and American, but not quite fitting into either of those molds. It was like I was too American to be Indian and too Indian to be American. But I think that as time has gone by, I have found ways to really feel proud of that tension. You know, in my book, I talk about how we wear our kurtas with jeans and we listen to Bollywood music alongside our top 40 hits. And this is just, these are all equally important parts of, you know, what we do. And I love Indian food, but I also love Italian food. And I don't think that those things need to feel mutually exclusive, even though growing up, I thought that was the case.
It's fascinating. So it's like you're wrestling with issues of assimilation and identity,
mm-hmm.
the way a lot of people do.
Yeah, and it almost felt like even more unfair because I was like, I was born and raised here. Like, I am American just like everyone else. So why am I made to feel like I don't fit in here?
And you probably wrestled with that well before you wrote the book.
Yeah, that was like my entire elementary, middle school, and high school experience.
Yeah, one of the things that I loved about the book is that you wrote in the book, hello. It's like, welcome to Indianish.
Yeah.
And I was struck by that because for a long time on Sirius Eats, the homepage had welcome Sirius Eaters.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm actually quite annoyed that I allowed some designer to have me take it off. Because I think the book is very welcoming, and I think a welcome is really important, especially when you're trying to communicate ideas that haven't been put forward before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this whole idea of you're welcoming people to the world that you inherited and that you're trying to make sense of as you move along in your life.
Yeah, and I also wanted the book to sort of sound like a conversation. Like I was just a friend standing next to you in the kitchen just chatting with
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
So I wanted to keep the conversation really chatty. I want people to feel unintimidated. I wanted them to feel welcomed. Exactly. Yeah.
Let's define the ish. And I know you say that it was just a placeholder
mm-hmm.
and then it became the title.
Yeah.
But what does the ish mean to you?
It's just like a representative of all of the things that have influenced my family's identity and our food. You know, it's the travels around the world that we took. You know, the fact that I grew up in Dallas, Texas, and the influences from that, the television shows I watched and the movies I was obsessed with, all of that is in this book, and all of that encompasses the ish.
So you wrote about what you know.
Yeah, and I think that, like, for me, that was the only cookbook that I could write. I don't want to pretend to be an authority on Indian food because I'm not. I didn't want this book to be like, this is your guide to Indian food.
Yeah.
And more just like, this is a guide to the food that I grew up eating.
It's funny that you mentioned that because neither you nor your mother had any formal training cooking, either mm-hmm. at a restaurant or even going to cooking school. But you felt like you had something to say and you could communicate it best through food.
Mm-hmm.
And that was your jumping off point from the book. And so
yeah.
did it ever give you pause that you hadn't devoted years to perfecting your cooking craft?
I felt really self-conscious about it at first. But I think this book is kind of, it's a reflection of exactly who I am, which is that I'm not a super skilled cook who spends hours in the kitchen. I am a pretty lazy cook. And, you know, my knife skills are fine, not great. And this book is reflective of that. Like, there are a lot of recipes that are very forgiving if you don't have good knife skills. These are recipes that I make on a weeknight because if something had like 5 sub recipes, there's just no way that you would find me making that on a Tuesday night. So I learned to sort of lean into those things that I felt really self-conscious about and make that into a cookbook that felt very real to where I am in my life
yeah.
now.
You sort of answer this in the book, and I'd love for you to answer it now, in the frequently asked questions about why should I trust you?
Mm-hmm.
So why should we trust you?
Well, I mean, I think first and foremost, I think you should trust me because you should trust my mom, because she's an incredible cook. Where I am a, you know, super lazy, not as skilled in the kitchen cook, like, my mom has been doing this for a really, really long time. She has learned on the job, and she is super skilled, super intuitive. Like, these recipes are all written by her. I just edited them, had them tested, and, you know, went through that whole process. So I think, one, because of my mom. I think the second is, like, I think that as a food writer, I kind of, like, I understood, you know, what, and as someone who's worked on many, many cookbooks and read many, many cookbooks, I kind of understood, like, okay, this is What does it take to write a cookbook that people will actually use, that will make an impact? That was something I thought about a lot. And then I also put a ton of effort into making sure that these recipes worked.
And were trustworthy.
I spent a month doing testing, and then I had each of them tested by 3 amateur cooks. Like, you know, I removed the recipes that got mixed feedback and only kept in the greatest hits. Like, this is a book that, you know, the most frustrating thing is when you buy all these ingredients and you put effort into recipe and then it doesn't work. I didn't
Got
want
it.
That to be the case.
No. That's the death of all of us.
Yeah.
You write that Indian food is everyday food.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that's an important thing that you wanted to communicate.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's this perception at, you know, many of the publications that I write for that they treat foods that are not Western foods almost as though they're like projects. Like there's no way you can make Indian food or Middle Eastern food or Korean food on your average weeknight. That's something you have to devote special time to. And I just wanted to rid people of that notion. This is the food that I grew up eating. This is the food that millions and millions of people eat every single day on, you know, Monday through Friday.
So you talk about spices a lot in the book. Give us a one-minute primer on Indian spices.
Sure. The spices are what add the depth and complexity to a lot of Indian dishes. Not every Indian dish has spices, though, and that's evident in the book. And not every Indian dish requires you to make a customized spice blend. I feel like that's something that really intimidates people about Indian food. They're like, well, I have to buy a spice grinder and blend up spices. In a lot of the dishes, the spices are left whole because they add cumin seeds taste totally different when you're eating them whole versus ground. Mm-hmm. They add a really interesting texture. They taste a little bit different. They're a little bit more intense. So I wanted this book to sort of teach you how to cook with spices in an everyday accessible way because that's how my mom cooked with them. And I also wanted to teach the basics about spices, like the idea that you have to toast them either dry or in some kind of fat to really activate their aromatics. The concept of a chonk, which is
yes.
when you...
we have to talk about chonk because, first of all, I'd never seen the word and we should have a spelling test for everyone who's listening. How do you spell chonk? C-H-O-N-K. H-O-N-K.
So the chonk, I get a lot of people who email me saying, that's not how you spell chonk. But chonk, the way that I spell it in the book is a sort of a phonetic spelling because it's a Hindi word. And in Hindi, there's a ch and then there's a ch, which is a more breathy. And this is the ch.
This is the chonk.
Yeah. Well, it's like a little more, it's like chonk.
Okay. Like, I'm never going to get it.
Give
I
it a little
tell.
More H.
Okay. So what about the magic of chonk?
So it's this really fundamental technique in South Asian cooking. And basically the idea is that you're heating up some kind of fat, whether that's ghee or oil, tossing in spices and or herbs and basically crisping them in the oil. And you pour it on top of a dish and it adds this unbelievable texture, an extra layer of richness and complexity.
And you say in the book, you can put it on anything, salad, vegetables, meat. It just,
nachos.
You chonk it.
Chonk nachos are unbelievable.
I love that. That's so great. So in the book, you write about, is that how you pronounce your mother's name? Ritu's tips.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the need to recite Ritu's tips because I do not live up to many of them. And I want to know if you live up to many of them. So I'm going to quickly go through them. Taste every dish for lime and salt. Never underestimate the power of a statement necklace. I wouldn't know about that. And statement earrings to go with the statement necklace. Change out of your work clothes as soon as you get home. You'll immediately feel more relaxed. Always take the stairs if you can. Appetizers are overrated and distract from all the hard work you put into a meal. 2.5 inches are as high a heel as you'll ever need. Anything taller is a recipe for bunions. Use cloth napkins even if you're using paper plates. They make everything look better. Better to be overdressed than to be underdressed. Invest in nice pottery. It will make your food look 10 times more impressive. And for dinner parties, try to be done cooking food at least 2 hours before guests come over so you can have a pre-party glass of wine. I have never mastered that. So how many of those have you mastered?
I'm still working on a lot of them, I would say.
Yeah, that's like an advanced course in gracious living.
Yeah, it's really funny. She cut out the one that she cut out that I'm really bummed. I kind of wish I could put it back in. This is more my dad's rule for living graciously, which is poop in your house in the comfort of your own toilet.
that's for the blooper reel.
Yeah. But okay, I try and take the stairs. That's one that I do. I feel like I'm always like a statement necklace or statement earrings person, never both, and I need to get better at doing both. My pottery collection is very, very limited. I just have a tiny apartment and that stuff chips really easily. I do love the tip about when you come home changing out of your work clothes. That I've found that's an easy one, and I do always feel more relaxed.
Did you initially fight all of your mother's tips?
no, these weren't the things that we fought about. Those were things where I was like, okay, yeah, she's got this figured out.
Yeah. Do you feel that she's right about the heels?
Yeah, I think she's 100% right about the heels.
I feel that way about my heels. So
I have since changed my philosophy on shoes. When I was younger, I was like always really into the high heels, and now I completely agree.
So, the book has really catapulted you in really interesting ways, right? How has the book changed your work life and how you view your work?
I feel like I never set out to be an ambassador for Indian cooking, but I guess I have been. I mean, there are obviously some really amazing and talented people out there who are also blazing a trail. You know, people like Tejal Rao and Khushbu Shah and Sonia Chopra, who are doing unbelievable work to sort of get stories about Indian cooking out there. But yeah, I've just sort of, as I'm on my book tour now, and it's the most exciting to meet other Desis, other South Asians who are like, I feel seen in this cookbook. I had never, you know, opened the Bon Appetit YouTube channel and seen someone cooking with curry leaves. That's cool and exciting to me. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to be given these platforms, and I want to use them to try to change things.
You do have, in your own way, a missionary zeal.
Yeah, I mean,
In a quiet way.
I'm getting less and less quiet about it. I feel like food media just, there is still this mentality that American cooking encompasses these Western cuisines and everything else is the other. And I still think Indian food is treated as this sort of strange, esoteric thing. And I really want to change that. I admire people who are doing that for other cuisines. I absolutely adore Andrea Nguyen, who just authored Vietnamese Food Every Day, because I hope to do what she's doing for Vietnamese food, for Indian food.
And you're doing a lot of video, mm-hmm. you know, for Bon App and for yourself, and maybe you'll come do stuff for Serious Eats. Will you come do some videos for Serious Eats? What are the things that you found hardest to master in doing videos?
What's funny is people always ask, like, what kind of training did you receive before you did video? And the answer is none. At Bon Appetit, they just throw you in front of the camera. There's no script. There's no nothing. They're just like, just go. Just do it. And they need you to just immediately be able to, while the onions are sautéing, just talk to the camera and say things and to just to be likable. But there's no way to, there's no formula for being likable.
No, I always used to say to people, because I used to do a lot of media consulting, and then I once told Jeffrey Steigart this, because he and I did a show together, and I said, don't worry, Jeffrey, if you just come across as likable and believable on TV, everything else falls into place. And I think that's true. But Jeffrey said to me in response, you'll take care of the likable and I'll take care of the believable.
And it's also terrifying to cook on camera. Like I said, my knife skills aren't great. And it was really tough having a camera zooming in while I was doing a not great job of chopping onions. And I'm getting slowly but surely better. But I'm just like, I wish they would not take video of me cutting onions or, you know, turning the heat on medium high and being like, okay, now medium high heat, and the recipe person in the back being like, well, your recipe says medium heat, being like, all right, medium heat. Medium heat it is. You know, being terrified that you're going to mess something up on camera. But I think the beauty, at least, of the Bon Appetit videos is that they love leaning into the mistakes and making it seem as real as possible.
Yeah, because I've always wondered whether that gestalt is real spontaneous or faux spontaneous?
No, it's all very real. I mean, you're just you're filming for such a long time that things just happen, and their editors are very good at just piecing it together into a really fun 10-minute segment.
You didn't set out to become a star. You're not trying to become the Madonna of Indian cooking, who had this insane focus and ambition. I know people that knew her when she was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But in your own quiet way, you actually do have this laser-like focus. Do you think that in part comes from your mom?
My mom just has always known how to hustle, and she just like instilled that hustle in me.
Amazing. That's what I took away. It's like your mom is a phenomenal hustler in the best sense of the word. So What's next? Like, are you developing, or do you feel confident enough to develop your own recipes?
There will always be some kind of collaboration with my mom and me. I think that the best recipe developers are people who kind of just have this intuition about cooking. And I don't think I have that intuition. I think my strengths lie elsewhere. So, yeah, I'd love to develop more recipes with my mom. My mom the other day told me that she was like, I think I have enough recipes for 3 cookbooks. And I was like, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Mom.
That's awesome.
But, but she's set to retire this year. So, you know, who knows?
Exactly. Give us 3 recipes that if someone had just bought the book, mm-hmm. that they should try.
The first one, I think, is one that I think has taken off out of all the recipes in the book, and it's the spinach and feta cooked like sag paneer or sag feta, and it's basically like a super super delicious coriander and cardamom spinach gravy that my mom discovered. You can sub out the paneer for cubes of briny salty feta, and it is just this wonderful marriage, and you top it with a chonk made of cumin seeds and red chili powder.
There's and that chonk again.
It's perfect over rice with roti. That's a fantastic starter recipe. I also love the roti pizza. It's on the cover. It's probably made more than anything else in our house. And the blend of red onions and cheddar cheese and cilantro chutney over roti is just this beautiful marriage. It almost tastes like Indian nachos is kind of how I think about it.
I like that.
And then the third one I think that everyone should make is the dahi toast, which is like my mom's take on almost like an Indian grilled cheese sandwich. You mix yogurt with cilantro and onions.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw you do a video on it.
Yeah. And then you spread it on sourdough bread, griddle it, and then top it with a mustard seed and curry leaf chonk. And you never would think that, you know, yogurt inside a sandwich, how can that possibly work? But it just works in the most amazing way. It's this tangy, crunchy, bright, spicy sandwich. And, you know,
it's the essence of Indianish.
Yeah, it is. And on the sourdough bread is key. And it is just
nothing Indian about sourdough bread.
Yeah, my mom just went to California in the 80s, discovered sourdough bread, thought
a
it was
fisherman's
awesome.
Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco.
Yeah. And thought it was amazing. But it's things like that my mom tried sourdough bread and was like, you know, in the dahi toast, the richness of the spices would pair really well with the tang of sourdough bread. Those are just connections she's able to put together.
Got it. So now it's time for the All You Can Answer Special Sauce Buffet. Who's at your last supper? No family allowed. Can be anybody, but no family allowed because everyone always says their family.
Yeah, I know. I wish it could just be like my entire extended family.
Yeah, see, can't do it.
That'd be great. I feel like I would love to have Mindy Kaling there because she's like, I look up to everything that she has done, and I feel like she would just be really funny and entertaining because it's a dinner. And then I would love to have the Obamas. Imagine like the Obamas, me and Mindy Kaling. That
I like
seems
this.
Like a great.
Yeah, that's a great foursome.
A great meal, yeah.
One more person, and then we're done.
One more person. How about Richard Gere? I feel like he'd be a great conversationalist. That's like a little like homage. If my mom can't be there, she send Richard Gere.
But would you demand that he ballroom dance with you?
Yeah, I would definitely demand that he like perform monologues from some of his movies.
Got it.
Definitely. Maybe
right.
The one from Shall We Dance.
So what are you eating?
So I've always thought that my last meal the first course would be like a traditional Indian meal with all of my favorite things, like, you know, like the roti pizza, some dal chawal. But then after that, I think there would just be an assortment of noodles around the world. So there would be like khao soi. There would be
from Thailand.
There would be like maybe some kind of pesto pasta situation. Maybe a bolognese. Maybe a pho.
Maybe
a ramen.
I
yeah.
like this.
Just like a long buffet
noodles
of,
from around
yeah.
the world. I
yes.
like this. That's
yeah.
Can I come?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, all are invited. I hear the Obamas are going to be there.
So what do you cook when there's nothing in the house to eat?
I make this tomato. It's like this tomato cheese toast. I toast a piece of bread. I melt. I put tomatoes, cheddar cheese on top, melt it in the toaster oven, and top it with chaat masala and have it with a glass of milk. That is what I eat.
The glass of milk is a Interesting.
The milk is critical. It cuts through the cheese and the intensity of the spices. It's really important. And
All right.
I feel like people are skeptical, but you just have to try it.
All right. I'll try it. So what's in your fridge at most of the time?
Usually like three or four kinds of cheese. I love cheese. And then like a lot of different kinds of specialty butters. Because I just love, like, toast with butter is a very...
So specialty as in French butter, high butter, fat butter.
Yeah, like your Kerrygolds.
Butter.
Yeah.
I assume there's ghee, clarified butter.
There is, but there's not always ghee. Ghee is not something I always have around. Usually it's really funny. Whenever my mom comes to visit, she'll just, like, throw a few sticks of butter in a pot and, like, skim off the top and just make ghee and pour it in a jar and then just... She'll have ghee for me. But, I mean, one of the reasons why in the book it's ghee or olive oil is because my mom kind of, like, trained me that you can cook Indian food with olive oil. She loves the fruity taste and the way that it complements Indian flavor. So
that's the essence of Indian-ish.
Yeah, it's not a given that ghee is in my fridge. And then a lot of yogurt. I would say yogurt is probably the food that I eat more than anything else.
Is it your father's yogurt?
I wish it were my father's yogurt, but I just don't always have time to make homemade yogurt. So it's often just like the convenience store brand, but it's always full fat yogurt. I feel very strongly about
it. Have you
this.
Had white mustache?
Yeah, I've had white mustache. It's good. I'm not as into like the really fancy yogurts. I like just getting a tub of the really basic stuff.
But full fat.
But full fat.
Got it. What's on your nightstand right now, book-wise?
I am reading Bali Kaur Jaswal. She wrote this story called Erotic Stories for Punjabi Widows, and she recently wrote a follow-up to that called, like, The Unlikely Adventures of the Shergill Sisters, and it's
about... You know, I actually wrote those books under a pen name.
And I love reading Indian American, or, like, just Indian authors generally, and so this is a book about these sisters who go back to India after their mother dies, and I grew up reading books where the characters didn't look or sound like me. So I feel like I'm retroactively reading all of these books
where
I can relate to the characters.
That's great. And then, of course, I think Serious Eaters on their nightstand.
Yeah, well, as soon as I can get a copy of it, I'm planning on bringing it on book tour with me so that I can read it.
So who's had the greatest influence on you in your career? Is there one person that's been really helpful and meaningful?
Yeah, I think that person would be Tejal Rao, writes for the New York Times. She and I met when I was at Lucky Peach really early on because my mother and her cousin introduced us in one of those, like, the way that, like, moms are like, you should
meet
this girl.
Right, and she's from Goa, right? She's from Goa, is she not?
No, Tejal kind of grew up all across the world.
Got it.
She has this really amazing sort of worldly upbringing, and we met and just immediately clicked, and she is someone who has just been, like, the most relentless advocate for me, has made introductions, has pushed me to believe in myself when I was feeling doubtful, and she's someone who, as she's risen up in the ranks and been in positions of power, she's not one of those people who's like, well, I want to be the only Indian person or the only woman of color. She has brought up other people of color with her. And I just really, really admire that. And yeah, I don't know what I would do without her.
So who would you love to have a one-on-one lunch with just to see how he or she thinks?
One person who's just, like, mind I'm fascinated by is Brooks Headley, who owns Superiority Burger.
I
feel like if there's someone...
He's been in that chair.
Yeah.
And he has the quirkiest, most interesting mind you can imagine.
I would love to just, like, I've interviewed him for stories before, but sometimes I wish I could just peek inside his brain and understand how it works.
I totally understand that. I like that. It's just been declared Priya Krishna Day all over the world. What's happening on that day?
Yeah, we're eating a lot of noodles and listening to a lot of Bollywood music, I would say. There's just Bollywood music just booming from every speaker everywhere. and we're also eating a lot of pastries, like pies specifically.
Pies.
Tons of pie. I'm very much like a pie over cake
person. So this is like a carb festival with the noodles and the pie.
It's raining pies. We're all eating noodles.
I love this. I want it to be Priya Krishna Day. Well, thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Priya Krishna. Pick up a copy of Indianish Recipes and Antics from a Modern American Family, and you can find Priya's writing in the New York Times and Bon Appetit and hopefully Serious Eats again soon. And you can also see Priya's videos all over YouTube. Anyway, she's everywhere. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And so long, Serious Eaters. We'll see you next time.